Welcome, everybody. Good to have the Stainsbys back. Looks like you guys had a good time. And you don't look any the worse for wear either, so glad you're back. You wore out? Yeah, I can relate. Glad to have all of you here. Grateful for everybody who's watching online, wherever you might be. We're glad for your presence as well. This is a study of Judges. We're finishing up. Well, we've kind of finished up chapter 8. Yes, anybody need a worksheet? John has some in the back. If you need one, he'll bring you one. We're starting just a little bit at the end of chapter 8 to kind of recap, so to lead us into chapter 9 of Judges. And we're talking about a fellow who actually was not a judge. So far, God is the one who's raised up judges, but this is a man who raised himself up. And there's a lot of other things like, well, not a lot, but there are other things like this in Judges. Judges has got some weird stuff, and this is kind of on the edge of weird. So at any rate, let's get into our study. Our intro, as you can see at the top, and recap, is from Judges 8, 28 to 31. We covered this at the end of last week's class, but we'll use that as a jumping off point for tonight. So who would like to read that? Judges 8, 20, 28 to 31. All right, got a hand in the back. That's Matt. If you would read for us.
Before the people of Israel, and they raised their heads no more. And the land had rest 40 years in the days of Gideon. Jerubbaal, the son of Jonah, went and lived in his own house. Now Gideon had 70 sons, his own offspring, for he had many wives. And his concubine, who was in Shechem, also bore him a son, and he called his name Abimelech.
All right. Gideon has blank sons by his wives. 70. Man. Could you imagine going to all those soccer games and Little League stuff? Anyway. But has another son he names Abimelech by a blank in Shechem. A concubine. Abimelech is a word used to designate blank among the blank. Anybody know what either one of those blanks would be? It's a word for king. King, K-I-N-G. Just like Pharaoh was a word for king. The word Agag, I used to think that was a name, but that was also a word used for king among the Amalekites. So it's a word to designate king among the Philistines. It was among the Philistines. But it's also used as a name. So Abimelech is a word used to designate kings among the Philistines, but it's also used as a name. And this young man was given the name Abimelech. Abraham had dealings with King Abimelech of Gerar in Genesis 20. And many years later, his son, blank, followed his father's example. So who would be Abraham's son who followed his example messing with an Abimelech? That's Isaac. Isaac, I-S-A-A-C. And of course, if you spell it wrong, you'll get a little red squiggly line underneath it. So don't worry about that. Isaac followed his father's example with another Abimelech in Genesis 26. These events were over 700 years prior to the time of Gideon. So the word Abimelech has been around for a long time at this point. And it has come to be used as a name in this case. All right, chapter 9, verses 1 to 21. Abimelech's treachery. I need somebody to read 1 through 6. All right. Carrie's got that. And then 7 through 15. Saw another hand. Okay, Rich. And then 16 to 21. Okay, Jamie. We're good. All right.
Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal, went to Shechem to his mother's brothers and spoke with them and with all the family of the house of his mother's father, saying, "Please speak in the hearing of all the men of Shechem. Which is better for you, that all 70 of the sons of Jerubbaal reign over you, or that one reign over you. Remember that I am your own flesh and bone. And his mother's brother spoke all these words concerning him in the hearing of all the men of Shechem, and their heart was inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, "He is our brother." So they gave him 70 shekels of silver from the temple of Baal-berith, with which Abimelech hired worthless and reckless men, and they followed him. Then he went to his father's house at Ophrah and killed his brothers, the 70 sons of Jerubbaal, on one stone. But Jotham, the youngest of Jerubbaal, was left because he hid himself. And all the men of Shechem gathered together, all of Beth Milo, and they went and made Abimelech king beside the terebinth tree at the pillar that was in Shechem.
Now when they told Jotham, he went and stood on the top of Mount Gerizim and lifted his voice and called out. Thus he said to them, "Listen to me, O men of Shechem, that God may listen to you. Once the trees went forth to anoint a king over them, they said to the olive tree, 'Reign over us.' But the olive tree said to them, 'Shall I leave my fatness, with which God and men are honored, and go to wave over the trees?' Then the tree said to the fig tree, 'You come, reign over us.' But the fig tree said to them, 'Shall I leave my sweetness and my good fruit and go to wave over the trees?' Then the tree said to the vine, 'You come, reign over us.'" I'm sorry, I'm trying to scroll down. My phone won't cooperate.
7 to 15.
Yeah.
And then pick it up at 16, read through 21.
Okay, I've got Karen's Bible here. But I'm sorry, I apologize. But the fig tree replied, should I get, I already said that. Then the tree said to the vine, "Come and be our king." But the vine answered, "Should I give up my wine, which cheers both gods and humans?" He told, "Sway over the trees." Finally, all the trees said to the thorn bush, "Come and be our king." The thorn bush said to the trees, "If you really want to anoint me king over you, come and take refuge in my shade. But if not, then let fire come out of the thorn bush and consume the cedars of Lebanon."
"Have you acted honorably and in good faith by making Abimelech king? Have you been fair to Jerubbaal and his family? Have you treated him as he deserves? Remember that my father fought for you and risked his life to rescue you from the hand of Midian. But today, you have revolted against my father's family. You have murdered his 70 sons on a single stone and have made Abimelech, the son of his female slave, king over the citizens of Shechem because he is related to you. So have you acted honorably and in good faith toward Jerubbaal and his family today? If you have, may Abimelech be your joy and may you be his too. But if you have not, let fire come out from Abimelech and consume you, the citizens of Shechem and Beth Milo, and let fire come out of you, the citizens of Shechem and Beth Milo, and consume Abimelech." Then Jotham fled, escaping to Beer, and he lived there because he was afraid of his brother Abimelech.
All right, thank you all for reading. Abimelech's treachery, number one. After getting agreement from his mother's blank in Shechem, his mother's family, people. Remember, his mother was a what? She was a concubine of Gideon. What was another name for Gideon? We had it here as we started reading. Jerubbaal. How'd he get the name Jerubbaal? Who gave him that name? His dad gave him that name. It means let Baal contend. You may be remembering some of this in the previous study. All right, so his mom, the concubine of Gideon or Jerubbaal, had a family there in Shechem, and so he went to that family and they said, "Yeah, we'll support you." And they went and spoke on his behalf to the cities.
I didn't write it that, but I had a question.
Okay.
Is it obvious what her motive was? Is it retribution from tearing down all the Baals, the altar and all that stuff from way back? Or why did she encourage
him? Oh, you mean his mom? I don't see any evidence that she encouraged him. This looks like something he came up with on his own. If she did, I don't see anything in the text that indicates that.
I thought we were saying that she was part of the family, the brothers that were encouraging him.
Oh, okay. Well, he went to the family and said, hey, here's my plan. I'm your flesh. There's 70 guys up in Ophrah who want to rule. Do you want them to rule over you, or do you want me? Because I'm your own flesh. Well, for him, those 70 boys up there, 70 brothers, they were also his own flesh, but he was willing to kill them. So that gives us an insight into his character. And they had to have some idea about what was going to be going on too, but at this point, that's not the plan. His plan is not obvious that he's going to go up there and kill those guys. Don? Right, that had any connection to Jerubbaal. Right. And that was the same kind of thing that's happened through history as regards royalty. It happened among the kings of Israel especially. It also happened with European kings. Anybody who was an heir to the throne, better watch out. You could get killed just because you are an heir to the throne, and that's what's happening here. So they spoke on his behalf to the city's leaders who funded his ambition with money from the house of Baal Berith, not the tabernacle in Shiloh, but an idolatrous house, an idolatrous temple. He used the money to hire blank men, worthless men. If you got money, there are worthless people willing to do dirty deeds. What's that AC/DC song? Dirty Deeds. Of course, all you good Christians listen to AC/DC all the time, don't you? But they have a song, Dirty Deeds, Done Dirt Cheap. There's another song. It's interesting, if you listen to rock and roll lyrics, you find out that they themselves decry the lifestyle. One of their lyrics is, too many women and too many pills. They know. Molly Hatchet, what am I getting into this for? But Molly Hatchet, what's the name of the song about destruction? And the whole lyrics are, the way we're living is taking us down a path to destruction. Why are we doing this to ourselves? Even Boston, climbing the ladder is the rung of success. It's all in there if you just listen to rock and roll. There's a lot of poetic sadness in songs that you would otherwise think are don't care anything about the deeper things of life. It's interesting how it comes through. I look at rock and roll. I used to just listen to it, but now I've started to think, what are they singing? And when you start looking at the lyrics, Kansas, what's Kansas' most famous song? Dust in the Wind. That's a pretty somber, sad thing to think. We're just dust in the wind? Well, we are dust in a sense, but we're not simply dust in the wind. There's a lot more to us than that.
Of course, the lead singer from AC/DC was married a lot of times, man. He was just taking Xanax.
Oh, yeah. And the lead singer, I could not believe this when I heard about this. The lead singer for Boston, because when I was in the service, Boston, that was the band. Boston, they had more hits and they were more famous. He wound up killing himself. It's like, God, what's going on out there? Anyway, I ask myself again, why am I talking about that? But here's a guy who made some really bad decisions. His mind was on himself, his own ambition, and he wound up, well, we'll get to that. He used the money to hire worthless men and then went to Gideon's house in blank. Where was Gideon's house? Where was his home? Ophrah. And killed blank of his blank brothers. Do the math. 69, killed 69 of the 70 brothers. One of them got away. The youngest brother, his name was Jotham, hid himself and so escaped. Number two, Abimelech returned to Shechem, where the men of that city and Beth Millo made Abimelech king. Beth Millo is the joining of the word for, well, the word Beth means house. And the word for, the Millo word is mound or earthwork. A couple of reasons I wanted to put this in here. Beth Millo is house of the earthwork. There's a tower there, a fortress. And that's what they will eventually resort to when push comes to shove. But I also want to point out once again that when you read Bible names, they usually have a meaning behind them. And it gives you some insight into those places. Maybe Bethlehem is the best example. What does the name Bethlehem mean? Anybody remember? Beth, there's Beth. What does that mean? House. Lehem, bread. House of bread. Where was Jesus born? House of bread. He was born in a place, the bread of life was born in a place called the house of bread. So, just that little insight there. Beth Millo is the house of the earthwork, the house of the mound, which actually was the place of the stronghold or the temple, the tower rather, not the temple. Mound or earthwork, and is thought to be associated with the blank of Shechem. That would be tower. Tower of Shechem. Number three, when Jotham was given the news that Abimelech had been made king, he went atop Mount Gerizim. What is significant about Mount Gerizim? Anything? When, before Israel came into the promised land, God told Moses, when you get there, here's what I want you to do. I want you to get half the tribes and put them on Mount Ebal. Get the other half of the tribes and put them on Mount Gerizim. I want all the tribes on Mount Gerizim to audibly pronounce all of the curses that will come if you do not keep the law. All the tribes on Mount Ebal will pronounce all of the blessings that will come if you keep the law. So he's on this place where Israel, having come into the promised land, six of the tribes had stood up there and pronounced all the curses that would come on Israel if they did not keep the law. The text doesn't say if there's significance to that in Jotham's mind, but I can't help think that there is, at least in the mind of the Lord, that he would tell us he's on Mount Gerizim saying these things. He's on Mount Gerizim and spoke a blank, blank. Those are two words that describe what was read in the text. It is a prophetic parable. A prophetic parable. He said, and this is the parable, the blanks went forth to ask the blank tree to reign over them. What went forth? Who went forth? The trees. In the parable, the trees go forth, and who did they ask first? The olive tree. Why did the olive tree say, no, I'm not going to reign over you? I got productive work to do. I make olives. People need my olives. I can't stop doing that to be a king. So, it refused. So the trees went to the blank tree. Fig tree. Which also declined. Why did the fig tree decline? Same basic reason. I make figs. That's my job. I need to be busy making figs. People need figs. I can't stop to be a king. Next to be asked was the vine. Okay, the vine's not a tree. Why did they ask the vine? Well, that's what's left. But what does the vine do? What did the vine say? Man, I make grapes. I'm busy making grapes. People need my sweet juice. It makes them feel good. I can't stop producing that to be king. So, finding no agreement here either, they finally went to the bramble. What's a bramble? It's a thorn. It's a worthless. This is what, remember when Adam and Eve sinned, God said, now the earth will bring forth, and you might as well have said brambles, because that's what the bramble is. It was part of the curse. But now, since the olive tree won't rain, and the fig tree won't rain, and the grapevine won't rain, well, let's go, so that's the bramble. And the bramble says, if it were not followed, that blank should come from it. Fire will come from the bramble and consume the blank of blank. Cedars of Lebanon. Now, what's significant about that? Okay, that's what would be used eventually. I don't know if that's the real significance, but in my mind, there's no more famous or rich, strong tree, valued tree. That's what I'm looking for, value. There's no more valued tree in the whole Middle East than the cedars of Lebanon. They're famous. So he's saying that you don't follow what I do when you make me king, even the cedars of Lebanon will burn up. That's the parable. Jotham then interpreted his own prophecy to mean that if what was done was with blank and blank, truth and integrity, that they should rejoice. But if not, he allowed that blank would come upon them, fire would come upon them from Abimelech, but also that blank fire from Shechem. And I have to confess here, I put that blank in there as I was working up the worksheet, and when I came back to it later, I forgot what I was going to put in there. But what would fit would be similar fire. In other words, this was what the prophecy was about. Oh, yeah, fire's going to come from Abimelech and get you guys because you're putting him in office. But you know what? Fire's going to come from you guys and get Abimelech too, which is like, well, how does that going to happen? So similar fire from Shechem would consume Abimelech. So this parable was a prophecy as well as a curse. Yeah, I kind of didn't mean to fool you. It's a prophecy as well as a parable. But in this point, we're going to focus on the idea that it's a curse. It's a prophetic parable, but it turns out to be a curse. Yes.
I kind of remember the passage, and I just looked it up. But when Jesus talked to the woman at the well,
yes,
and she talked about that mountain, that was also the same mountain.
That's Mount Gerizim. Yes, good observation. And she said, we worship on this mountain, and you guys worship over there.
What was it Jesus talked about? They didn't know how to worship or what they were worshiping. What was the point of that?
Well, they were not... What's the word? Their affiliation was not with the Judaic priesthood. They had set up another priesthood all their own, and they weren't worshiping in Jerusalem. When you follow the trail of history, as God would say from time to time, when you get to the place where I'll put my name, that's where you stay. And he put his name in Jerusalem. So there wasn't any name of God in Mount Gerizim. That was connected with the curses, as a matter of fact. There was no legitimate priesthood that would serve on Mount Gerizim. That was the Samaritan's priesthood. Because you got to have a priesthood. How can you offer anything to God without a priesthood? But if your priesthood's illegitimate, man, you got problems. That's why Jesus said to her, you don't know what you worship. Because you don't have any guidance from God. And that's a lesson right there. If you're practicing things in religion that you don't have guidance from God for, then you don't know what you're doing. And then Jesus came back and said, we know what we do because salvation is of the Jews. So, good question, good point. Yes, Johnny.
Little rabbit hunt.
Yeah, that's all right.
Well, not a hunt, but a really popular Johnny Horton historical song years ago about the Battle of New Orleans.
Yes.
In a line there that when the British started running, well, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they
ran through the bushes where a rabbit wouldn't go.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch him.
Ramble was.
Right, yeah. That's a great song. I changed the lyrics at some point. 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Sanders down in Mighty Mississippi. Took some fried chicken and we took some baked beans. And we, well, you don't want to hear. If you ever get bored and don't have anything to do, try that. Just get some songs and change the lyrics to be what you want them to be. See how that turns out. All right, chapter 9, verses 22 to 57. We won't read all of this because there's a lot of detailed information. But you can kind of skim it and try to fill in the blanks as we are going through this. Of course, the last blank. Abimelech, so this Abimelech was the first last blank on that last line. And then, so this parable was a prophecy as well as a curse. Any other blanks that you want? Need to go back and fill in. Anything at all? Okay. Number 4. Abimelech ruled over Israel for how many years? 3 years. Now, do you remember how long it said there was peace in the land after Gideon ruled? 40 years. 40 years is enough time to forget that Gideon had brought that blessing about, or God had brought it about through Gideon. And he's just been in power now for 3 years. It says, God sent and blank, blank between Abimelech and the men of Shechem. Evil spirit between Abimelech and the men of Shechem, so that blank might be done regarding the blank of his brothers. And this is somewhat my interpretation. Vengeance, I would put justice, but vengeance is not a bad word because the text says God claims vengeance. I think that's interesting too. He doesn't claim justice, he claims vengeance. His mind says the Lord, I will repay. Vengeance or justice might be done regarding the blank of his brothers. Murder. As Abimelech had risen up against his brethren, a man named Blank came to Shechem. Gaal is his name. And it should say, came to Shechem and rose up against him. But it says, rise up against him. I didn't get a squiggly red line because it was a legitimate word. For whatever reason, the men of Shechem put their blank in him, put their blank in Gaal, just as they once had in Abimelech. What word goes there? Confidence, trust. And this guy was kind of a nobody, just came in from nowhere. And Abimelech was their flesh and blood, but they put their trust in him. Number 5, in the conflict that followed, Gaal was blanked and driven out of Shechem. He was defeated. He with his forces were defeated and he was driven out of Shechem. And then it says Abimelech blanked Shechem itself. Remember, this is his hometown. He destroyed Shechem, killing the people and blanked the city with blank. He sowed the city with salt. The leaders fled to the blank of El Berith, And there you would put the temple, which is identified with the blank of Shechem, Tower of Shechem. Now, that's not all perfectly spelled out in the text, but when you read it and you think about it, you put it all together, all the puzzle pieces fit to say that's what that was. Yeah, that's Romans chapter 1 talks about that, and so does 2 Thessalonians 2, or 2 Thessalonians 1. If you're willing to believe a lie, then he'll give you over to that lie. It's kind of like Sunday night's lesson. If you're looking out for God, he's going to be looking for you. If you're seeking the treasure in his word, he'll help you find some of that treasure. Shannon? Which number?
Destroyed.
Number 5, the second.
Destroyed. Then Abimelech destroyed Shechem. You bet.
Where is Shechem located?
It's, if you look at the Sea of Galilee and you come down south, about a third of the way from the Sea of Galilee to the Dead Sea, and then you go west, it's midway between the coast of the Mediterranean and the Jordan, right around in there. That's the area. So, that would have been a good thing to have on an overhead.
It's amazing that you knew that on recall.
I got a mind like a steel trap. It's closed most of the time, but... Where are we here? The temple of Elberith, which is identified with the Tower of Shechem, using his troops to gather blank, Abimelech ignited a blank against the inner chamber. He used his troops to gather wood. He went out and he cut a limb off a tree and he said, "You guys do the same thing I'm doing. Watch me and do the same thing." And so he took that limb back, stacked it against the inner chamber of that tower, and set it on fire. He ignited a fire against the inner chamber, killing the leaders of Shechem, altogether about blank people. How many? Said about 1,000 people. Both blank and blank.
Why?
Because he's, can you say this in Bible class? He's a jerk. He's the guy that said, "I want to be the big boss. I want to be the grand fromage. So I'm going to go kill 70 brothers of mine. So there's no contest for the throne, so to speak." Yep. If
that was a big tower, if it held 1,000 people.
How many?
You said he killed 1,000.
Yes, 1,000.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought you said 75,000. So, man.
You know.
Yeah.
On a good day. Three times, four times as big.
So there was a structure big enough for all those people to try to hide in, and they got enough wood stacked up in there to build a fire large enough to kill them all. It's a... I don't know if God was going to have videos of all this stuff when we get up there, but wouldn't that be neat? Like an instant replay. What's that?
Was it the leaders of Shechem that he killed?
Let me see where we are here. Yes, the leaders of the city fled to a tower in the middle of the city. There were probably more people there than the leaders. But the text talks about the leaders fleeing there, so they fled there with everybody else, I'm sure. Kind of like, what's that fortress? Masada. The Jewish leaders fled to Masada, but with them were a lot of other people, including their families, women and children. That's the way it works. Leaders of the city fled to a tower in the middle of the city, apparently intending to blank his success against the tower of Shechem. Oh, wait a minute. I'm getting ahead of myself, aren't I? This is number six. From Shechem, Abimelech went to the city of Thebes and blanked it. Says he captured it. Now, it doesn't say why. Likelihood is these were in league with the Shechemites, and that's why he went there. But it doesn't say that. Again, the blank of the city fled to a blank in the middle of the city. The leaders of the city fled to a tower in the middle of the city. Apparently, intending to blank his success against the tower of Shechem, and it's a weird way I did this, but to duplicate his success. In other words, he did this in Shechem itself, built that fire against that tower and burnt everybody up. So we're going to do the same thing, going to duplicate that success. Abimelech brought blank to the base of this tower also. Fire. Why is that significant? What was in the parable, the prophetic parable that was also a curse? Fire. Fire's going to come from Shechem and get you, Abimelech, but Abimelech's going to have some fire coming from him and getting the people of Shechem. This time, however, a certain blank threw a part of a blank. A certain woman threw a part of a millstone and blanked Abimelech's skull, crushed his skull. Rather than allowing it to be said that a woman blanked him, killed him, Abimelech ordered his blank to pierce him through, his armor bearer to piercing through, thus he died. What will happen similarly to that later on? Saul, when Saul is wounded, there's no woman involved at that point, but he doesn't want the Philistines to get him alive, and so he has his armor bearer to kill him, but his armor bearer wouldn't do it, so Saul fell on his own sword. Somewhat of a parallel there. Number seven, verses 56 to 57 tell us that this is how blank repaid the blank of Abimelech. God repaid the wickedness of Abimelech as well as that of the blank of Shechem, the leaders of Shechem. This makes it clear that though things may blank to be happening as a matter of course, they may appear to be happening as a matter of course. You ever look at something and say, well, what a coincidence? And then you wonder, well, is that really a coincidence? Or was that the hand of God? They could actually be happening as a result of the blank of God the Almighty. And I would put in those two blanks the providential hand of God the Almighty. In other words, that's what these two verses are saying. That this wasn't just a coincidence that young Jotham had said this parable and it came to pass. God was making it happen. God is the one who repaid the wickedness, both of the Shechemites and of Abimelech. Remember, Abimelech, not a judge. But this took place during the time of the judges. God was raising up judges to help his people. And this young man, for whatever reason, decided to raise himself up. It may be that he was proud of what his dad did and that they had peace for 40 years because of what his dad did. But if he was really proud of his dad, why would he kill the 70 sons of his father in order to be in charge? A lot of questions unanswered. But have you got any questions? Do you have any observations? All right, Shannon? I don't know of any record of what happens with Jotham. It says, verse 21 is the last we read of him that I know of. Jotham escaped and fled and went to Beer. Maybe he became an alcoholic. I don't know. And remained there because of Abimelech, his brother. No, Beer is the name of a place. It's he didn't go to drinking. The judges themselves, it's a good question. The conquest took 5 to 7 years, but the judges covered much longer. And I don't remember right now how long of a span it covered. Right. And they overlap a little bit, too, it appears from the text. Because it's not like this is all happening in the same part of Israel. There are different things happening in different places. And it's one of the things I've noticed about the way God put things into Scripture. I want them to be a certain way. I want a chronology. Give me a chronology. Give me when did that happen? God doesn't care about that. He just said, this is the way it happened, Marty. You need to sit down and shut up and listen to what I'm telling you and just take this for what it is and learn from what you can from it. Don't worry about the chronology. But when there's sufficient information to glean a chronology, I'll say that, I say go ahead. Just like figuring out that this is taking place about 700 years from the time of Abraham. It doesn't say that anywhere in the text. You got to go back and look and figure that out. But when you do, it helps me a lot to put things in perspective. Shannon, you had a question. Did I get to it? Okay. What was your question? Oh, that's right. That's what it was. And I
judges from 1240 to 1000 BC.
Okay. 1240 though, that's a I wouldn't agree with that date because there's hard evidence that the Exodus took place about 1450 BC. Now the liberal scholars will say, "Oh, it's much much later than that." But that's because they didn't agree with who the Pharaoh was at the time. But there's hard evidence that it took place about 1450 BC. Which, and when you go to, let me see where it is. There's a place when they're building the temple. It says right there, it was so many years from the Exodus, I think it was. See if I can find that real quick, because that is an important passage. Is that it? I think you're right. I think that's it. What's it say? I know I'm sad that class is over too. That's it. 480 years. Thanks, Kim. Came about in the 480th year after the sons of Israel came out of his land of Egypt. So there's God's information right there for a chronology. And Solomon was reigning about 967, somewhere around in there. So, you know, you got some numbers to work with there to give you a pretty clear idea. Thank you. Appreciate you guys. Don't want to hold you any longer.